Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening. You're just about to put 2015 to bed, but first it's time to go over the year's top headlines in South Dakota politics. The Dakota Political Junkies are gathered to help us do just that. Seth Tupper is a Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter. Seth joins us today from the SDPB studios in Rapid City. Seth, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Jonathan Ellis is a reporter columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Jonathan, thanks for being here as well.
Hi, Lori.
And John Hunter is going to be joining us in a few moments from the Madison Daily Leader. Let's start with Jonathan and Seth. We've got a lot to cover in South Dakota politics for the year. Maybe we should start with some of our less than proud moments, the scandals in South Dakota. Seth Tupper, do you want to start out? What comes to mind under that headline of scandals?
Well, that was kind of a theme of the year, unfortunately. Obviously, in political news and government news was, you know, toward the latter half of the year, we had a flare-up, if you will, of news about the EB-5 immigrant investor program, which had kind of been a dead story since last year's election after Senator Rounds was elected. The story had kind of gone away, and then, of course, it flared up again with the USCIS threatening to terminate the South Dakota's program and the state suing SDRC to try to recover some money and some documents, and a group of Chinese investors suing the state and SDRC to recover money they said they lost in a investment in a beef plant in Aberdeen. And you know, when you had all that happening, then you also had the situation flare up with the deaths in Platte, the Westerheist family, and the allegations that that may have had something to do with his employer's loss of a federal grant that was, you know, filtered through the state. And you had, of course, the state flag stolen from the Secretary of State's office. That arose, and you had missing money that turned up in audits from the prior Secretary of State. And all of this seemed to be happening in a period of just a few months. All these headlines were coming out, and so it, to me, that kind of the year in state government, absent, you know, obviously a big election in an off year like this, that was kind of the dominant story of the year, was this continual parade of scandals that kept popping up.
Now, Seth, is that unusual for South Dakota politics? Is it unprecedented, would you say?
I would say it's unprecedented to have that many different stories of that nature going on all at the same time. I mean, we've had, you know, I think back to the Janklow era when we had the death at the state training school of a teenage girl. That was, you know, a big kind of scandal for state government. And, you know, there have been past examples like that that come along here and there. But as far as a continual parade of new and different scandals that just keep popping up, I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like we saw this year.
Jonathan Ellis, is that anything that we should be concerned about, that there's so much happening at once, or do you think it's just sort of a coincidence? It's not a pattern for the future?
Well, the human nature is human nature, and where there's money, there's always going to be cause for concern, whether it's in government or the private sector or that kind of thing. I don't think we can say welcome to New Jersey yet, but there are these things that popped up, and Seth is right. It is to have them sort of lumped together the way they have been, and keep in mind, I guess the EB-5 deal has been sort of this long. I mean, we've had that for a couple of years going on, and EB-5 is going to be a scandal that's going to be with us for a long time to come, given the nature of all these lawsuits flying around now. I mean, you've got the SDRC founder, Yoak Boland, the former state employee who magically got a contract to run it on his last day of state employment. He's suing the state, and you've got the state suing him, and you've got the Chinese investors suing everybody. So that'll be with us for a long time. And then you look at this GearUp situation. I mean, you know, when we're doing this show for the top headlines of 2016, we might be talking about EB-5 and GearUp again, because you have an ongoing investigation. And Seth alluded to the fact that the employer, you know, murdered his family. We're told by the attorney general on the same day, basically, or within hours of learning that this contract is disappearing. And the conclusion among a lot of people is that, you know, where did all this money go? A lot of employees, consultants, were getting a lot of money for a program that in South Dakota was supposed to help Native American children get into college and succeed in college. So, you know, we have this ongoing investigation. So, you know, we aren't going to learn more about this until 2016, and EB-5 is going to be, you know, is going to continue on. So these will probably be top stories next year as well.
Is there anything specific, Jonathan Ellis, that we should be paying attention to? Are we going to get, as citizens, we're going to get fatigued of the story? We need to keep watching. What should we be looking for next?
Well, I think at the end of the day, on the Gear Up, people really want to know why. What triggers a guy to murder his wife and four children? I mean, that, and when you say fatigued, I mean, we monitor, you know, what readers are interested in on our website, and there's great interest in this story because people are really perplexed as to how something would trigger this kind of a reaction from somebody. So I think when authorities do come forward with some answers, and obviously they're looking at the finances, the financial trail of all of this, I think people really want to know what was behind all of this.
John Hunter joins us now from Madison. He's the publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
We are talking about some scandals in South Dakota government. We're on EB-5 and some issues that surround that. Anything you want to add to the scandal headline?
Well, I concur with Jonathan on that, too, that people want to know what it is behind that. But I think also, as an extension of that, they want to know how this can happen is in the framework of government, that we can have grants and so forth that are either unaccounted for or misappropriated or all that kind of stuff, that there are some, you know, why aren't there audit systems in place or how can this kind of stuff happen? South Dakotans certainly don't want to think that tax dollars, whether they come from the state or from the federal government, are misused. So I think that's an extension of finding out why that happened, as well as the EB-5 thing. And usually you think of privatization as being more efficient in the couple of cases here where it's clearly led to scandal.
Is it realistic for us, John, to expect an answer to that question? How could it happen?
Yeah, I don't know if it's reasonably, if we can reasonably expect that. But I do know that if the governor and the leadership of the legislature said this is a priority for us, is going to say that we want to make sure that we are a scandal. Well, that's not the words they would use, of course, but they wouldn't have misappropriation of these things. And every cabinet meeting and every discussion with every secretary and so forth says this is a priority for this administration or for these 2 years. I think that would be what South Dakotans would love to see.
Jonathan Ellis, let's bounce back to you and talk a little about Governor Dugard and his promise in his first term of no new taxes, and now there are some things that, you know, in his second term are looking like maybe he's willing to depart from some of that. Do you want to lay out a few of those topics for us?
Well, yeah, I mean, you hear some conservatives starting to gripe a little bit that voters elected a Democrat for the second term as governor, so, I mean, that's kind of a bad joke that some conservatives are making these days. But, you know, I mean, look, in his first term, Governor Dugard was very insistent, no new taxes. He was going to cut the budget. You know, obviously the economy was in bad shape, and his reasoning was, I'm not going to increase taxes on people when they're suffering right now as well. So obviously in the second term now, it's a different story. I mean, we've already had a situation which, you know, earlier this year, the legislature passed a fairly comprehensive fee to increase taxes, gas tax, excise tax on new vehicles, that sort of thing, to help pay for road and bridge repair. So, you know, he was willing to do that. Now we talk about Medicaid expansion. That doesn't raise taxes per se. And in fact, they're only going to do that if they can, if it's sort of revenue neutral in terms of cost shifting. But but that's definitely a program that's been associated with Democratic policies. And then you look at the Blue Ribbon Task Force. The governor hasn't actually laid out his proposal yet for that. We'll get that on the State of the State speech, presumably. But everybody expects that will probably include some kind of a sales tax increase if it's not a 0.25% or a 0.5%. So clearly the governor fulfilled his pledge on that first term, but the second term he's looking at some areas that really are going to probably put him in conflict with some of the some of his Republican lawmakers.
Let's bounce back to Rapid City and Seth. Anything you want to weigh in there on that Blue Ribbon Task Force or Medicaid expansion there?
Well, I guess on the tax increase, you know, Governor Dugard would have some political cover on the sales tax increase to fund teacher salaries, because all indications are that would go to a vote of the people. So that would be one issue he could sort of sidestep and avoid taking responsibility for raising those taxes. He does have some cover as well from when he came into office the first year. He executed a quite large cut in the budget, and after inheriting a deficit from the budget deficit from previous governor rounds. But of course, he did raise the gas taxes, or sign a bill that raised gas taxes and vehicle registration and license fees, as Jonathan mentioned. So he has had a mixed record in that regard. But you know, perhaps with the teacher salary issue, that may be an area where, as I said, he'll be able to sidestep that a little bit by turning it over to the voters to decide.
Seth, is it too soon to talk about his legacy?
No, I don't think it's too soon. You know, we're midway through his second term, and I think, you know, mainly his legacy now would be, cutting the budget. He of course came into office at a time, on the tail end of national economic recession, inherited a very difficult budget situation, came into office and pledged to do something about that and to cut the budget. And whether you agreed with the budget cuts that he enforced in his first year or not, he did achieve that. He set out to accomplish those cuts, and he did it as a rookie governor, getting a legislature to go along with him. So I think there's that. There's also the criminal justice reform initiatives that he ushered through the legislature that essentially were meant to, you know, keep the state from building another prison, and to keep people, nonviolent offenders, in their communities, and that was a big accomplishment of his. On the other hand, if it's kind of been forgotten, especially with all the new talk of teacher salaries, but he tried to usher through a big package of education reform, including repeal basically of tenure for teachers, institution of merit pay, and if you recall, that got shot down at the polls in a popular election, was referred to a vote. So you know, those are things I look at, and I see his legacy so far. Now, obviously, he has two more years to go, and quite a bit of opportunity to add to that legacy. But, and then maybe the other part too is, you know, he hasn't been able to escape this EB-5 situation. I mean, he's not usually given any of the blame for that. He was lieutenant governor when the EB-5 situation arose, but it's all played out. You know, the investigations and the lawsuits have all been while he's been governor, and he really hasn't been able to escape that issue. It's kind of been a shadow over state government his entire term of office, and that's probably been the part of his legacy that he wishes he could get rid of.
Jonathan Ellis, I want to go back to something Seth mentioned about criminal justice reform. Is it are we seeing the impact of that reform yet? Is it too soon to judge the positives and negatives?
I think it's still kind of a work in progress. And first off, they did the adult, and now they've been working on juvenile offenders. I mean, there's, you know, I think that is a work in progress. And the question is, at the end of the day, how much? I mean, this is all intended. There's a couple pragmatic reasons. Well, pragmatic reason being to try to save taxpayers' money, as Seth said. They don't want to build another prison. But you know, there's I think some people are becoming more cognizant of the fact that as a nation, we imprison a lot of people for non-violent offenses, and the question is whether that's sort of a moral issue as well. And so, but you know, those things will take time, I think, to play out. I mean, you know, I've heard now from some, you know, you're starting to hear from some of the counties now, particularly Minnehaha County, which has that, you know, people aren't necessarily getting in prison, but they're spending more time in county jail, and so that's adding to some problems. So maybe there's some unintended consequences there, but you know, some of this is still playing out.
John Hunter, let's go back and talk about some of the ballot issues. Money lending. You want to weigh in on how that unfolded this year?
Sure. It's an interesting topic that draws people on several different angles. But the primary issue there is that, you know, the state's usury laws, which allow kind of unlimited or at least high interest rates to be charged has been probably a significant economic growth factor in the state's history, and that's how we got all these banks domiciled here. And you know, to have Citibank and all the other credit card operations. And then it kind of falls through to the money lending thing, which would also be subject to kind of the payday lenders, which are very short-term loans at very high rates. And so it kind of falls over to that, which then play by similar rules. And so therefore, they're saying that's way out of hand, and they do charge certainly a lot more than credit cards, you know, Citibank credit cards would. And so then people say, well, this is unfair to people that they're getting charged 100% interest on a, you know, whatever term loan, or it's a very high things. And they're right. There is an issue with that. And then the other side comes back and say, look, but if we don't have these payday lenders, then there's a certain segment of the population that can't make it from paycheck to paycheck without those short-term loans, even at those high rates. So I think it's more complicated than it appears, and I think the interesting part on behalf of my fellow journalists is the campaigns and the protests and the underhanded ways of kind of trying to influence this thing may become a bigger part of the story than the actual ballot issue.
We're going to take just a quick break and return with more from the Dakota Political Junkies. Stay with us. You're listening to Dakota Midday on member-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We have the Dakota Political Junkies here, Seth Tupper in Rapid City, John Hunter from Madison, Jonathan Ellis is in Sioux Falls. Let's make sure we get to some highlight local issues that you've remembered from 2015. Seth Tupper, do you want to start us off? What's been big out in Rapid City?
Well, I think here it's the year in Rapid City was kind of there was a battle for sort of the political soul of the city. I mean, it started in the early spring with an election on a large proposal, very expensive proposal to expand the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center. Which was built in the 70s, and it was deemed by some people to be out of date and out of compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so there was the numbers escape me right now, but it was a rather large budget for that project. It went to a public vote, and it was defeated. Well, then we had later in the spring, early summer, the mayor, Sam Quaker, who supported that effort to expand the Civic Center was defeated by a former police chief in what was a very, I would say, personal and very bitter campaign. And then, of course, right now we're sort of enveloped in a controversy over a city council, a former city council president, still on the city council, who allegedly, went to the employer of an ex-city councilman and complained about a column that he had written in the journal. And there's a lot of battling going on about that right now. But there are factions within Rapid City, and there's a group that affectionately refers to themselves as Wingnuts here, that is a more conservative group. And anyway, there's a lot of sort of backstory and underlying animosity. But that plays out in things like the Civic Center vote, the mayoral election, and it's very interesting local political year because of that, especially when you have, as I said, a guy who was the police chief who worked for Mayor Sam Quaker running against him, and basing his campaign largely on a lot of things that he didn't like about that mayor, and then the mayor losing, and he's since left town. He got a job as a city manager in Iowa, and in a way, you could say he was run out of town, so to speak, by that election. So it was a very interesting political year in Rapid City, and as I said, sort of the battle for the vision of the city, what direction the city will go. There are two very distinct groups there, with former Mayor Quaker represented one of those sides, and the new Mayor Allender represents another, and I think that battle is ongoing, and you see it now in this very political battle that's going on between a current councilman and an ex-councilman over an opinion that was published in our paper.
So what's next in that regard? And I'm wondering how race relations are playing into all this conversation, and what's next for you?
That's been another issue. What's next, sort of in the political front, is just this week, the former councilman Ron Sasso filed a complaint. The backstory on that is that Ron Sasso, he's a former councilman. He wrote an opinion piece that was published in our paper in June, right before a runoff election that involved current councilman Jerry Wright. And the column was critical of Jerry Wright. Jerry Wright didn't like it. He's acknowledged that he went to Ron Sasso's private nonprofit employer, complained about the column. Long story short, within a few weeks, Ron Sasso was fired from his job. And there is disagreement as to whether Jerry Wright caused that firing, whether he asked for that firing, whether he had any influence on it. But anyway, Ron Sasso, the former councilman, filed a formal complaint this week with the city, and that will trigger a process moving forward where there will be an investigation and a report made to the city council. So that's the next step with that. Race relations have been another really interesting issue in Rapid City in 2015. Of course, we had the incident at the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center where some beer was spilled or sprayed or poured, depending on whose view of the incident you take. Anyway, there was some beer that was came in contact with students from the American Horse School on the Pine Ridge Reservation. An arrest was made. The issue went to trial, and the man was acquitted for his role in that. But that, of course, went on for months and came to a trial in a public setting this summer at the Performing Arts Center here in Rapid City, and it was a very public trial with high attendance. And so it's just a sort of a continuing of old wounds, especially deep here West River, that just never seemed to heal, and I think it caused a bigger rift, and we still are sort of feeling the effects of that today.
Do you just see a bigger rift, or do you see, as a result of that, more people reaching out to try to initiate greater healing?
You see both. There are groups here in Rapid City that have been conducting meetings and trying to do reconciliation efforts during the Lakota Nation Invitational Basketball Tournament. It was just recently held here. There was a threat to move that out of Rapid City, but it stayed, with its organizers saying, I heard Brian Brewer, one of the organizers, talking about the fact that the tournament had always been about reconciliation, and so there are efforts both ways, but I think there's animosity, I think, on both sides, with some of the majority white population in Rapid City feeling that the Civic Center beer issue was blown out of proportion, and then obviously some in the Native American community feeling that there was an instance of injustice.
Jonathan Ellis, let's move to the other side of the river. Tell us what has been a big issue for you this year.
Well, I mean, after listening to Seth and the soap opera of his government here, you'd want to be covering government out there. That sounds right. I mean, the big issue here is whether people should be allowed to plant flowers in their boulevards. But I think from our perspective, a big story locally was probably the fact that the rail yard is going to be removed from downtown. I mean, there'll still be some operational rail lines, but big area of development downtown will be available. And really, I think that's a credit to Mayor Mike Huther for sort of persevering on this project. I mean, it was 10 years in the making. He sort of inherited it from his predecessor. He had some dedicated staff. Josh Peterson, who's the project manager on that, they kind of persevered through the federal bureaucracy to get that done. So that's, I think, locally, that'll be a big story, because it's, our downtown has really been doing quite well, and this sort of sets in stage another evolution of development, particularly on the east side of the Big Sioux River here. So I think that from my perspective, that was one of the bigger local stories.
Now, you had a lot of the payday lending drama kind of unfolding in Sioux Falls, though, didn't you?
Yes,
I'm not going to let you get away with that. There was some dirty politics going on right downtown.
Yeah, I mean, for people who don't know, Steve Hildebrand, who was sponsoring the measure to cap interest rates at 36%. He owns a quite charming restaurant downtown named Josiah's, and suddenly he started noticing all over the summer different clientele showing up and occupying the restaurant. And it turned out that highly suspect that the that a car, a title loan lender from Georgia was actually paying to have homeless people brought into town and to then occupy Steve Hildebrand's restaurant. So there was quite a bit of several weeks of drama surrounding all of that. So that was definitely a big local story that had sort of statewide implications as well.
Do you think that will come back when the election comes around then? Because that issue is not done.
Well, you know, and I think the issue's not done. I mean, I think that now, I mean, we're waiting to see now that if all of these, if they qualify for the ballot, I think that a lot of the resources will be put into campaigning now in the actual election process. You know, I think that the payday lenders will try to get their measure passed, and they'll put a lot of money into it. So I think that that's where we'll see some interesting, I think it was John or, you know, said, but we'll see some interesting campaigning come out of both of these two measures, especially, you know, if they're both on the ballot.
And Jonathan, I'm wondering, can you or can you not plant flowers in the boulevard in Sioux Falls?
Oh, you know what? You're going to either there. You know, they just can't figure it out. And technically, you're not supposed to. But there are some people who have been doing that, and the city officials are sort of tearing their hair out about this.
Flower bandits.
That's right, flower scofflaws.
Maybe the flowers will be taken out by snowplows with messages on them.
There you go.
There'll be a disclaimer for the flowers. That's what you need. You need a disclaimer in the boulevard for your flowers. John Hunter in Madison, what do you want to talk about for 2015 in your neck of the woods?
Well, I was actually, I'm not sure everyone knows about this, but the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee held a hearing in Madison this year. First of all, there are field hearings that can be held anywhere in the country. Most of them are held in Washington, D.C., of course, but it actually came to Madison, small town in South Dakota, and talked about cybersecurity. Of course, Dakota State having its expertise in that area, and it's just an absolute rocket ship. I can't overstate exactly the impact of what's going on in those programs at DSU. I think it's fair to say that the U.S. is probably either already involved in a cyber war or will be soon, where actually that people who don't like us will attack our vulnerable systems, and then we will attack back. And it's just an extraordinary era, I think, that we live in, you know, with the kind of the open Internet, which has kind of been open ever since it was invented, and then now being used against the United States and so forth. So it's fascinating testimony. Senator Thune brought in speakers from other areas, I think real experts in the field, and a couple of real experts on the field on staff here at our faculty at Dakota State, and you know, a packed house for that hearing, and it was just an extraordinary event. And I'm hoping that there'll be a lot of students who are at Dakota State today who may save American lives in future skirmishes with the Middle East or any other places. So it's not widely known, the impact of this thing, but I think its impact will be known soon.
John, do you see people coming from all over the world to the programs at DSU, or do you see more local students that are studying cybersecurity and then traveling to other places to bring that knowledge elsewhere?
I think you see both of those. Certainly our international student population has increased, and I can't remember offhand the number of countries that are represented, 20 or 25 different countries have, or students are here from those countries. But I think it's been a real draw for South Dakotans, and you can probably guess, I just heard this the other day from DSU's president, is that in the last few years, as this program has grown so much, that the gender percentages have shifted. You know, it's generally been more women than men at DSU over its 130-year history, and now it's shifting more toward young men as being, and part of this is the cybersecurity growth where I don't know why that would matter from a gender basis, but that is happening. And but, you know, the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, all those are clamoring for graduates here and would love to have 5 or 10 times as many as Dakota State can deliver. And in a lot of cases, are paying for tuition, a stipend, and so forth, as long as you agree to work for the FBI or Department of Homeland Security, which most of them think that'd be a perfect thing anyway. So, and some of them will be able to work remotely and continue to live in South Dakota. Others will go off to centers of defense that will contribute to our country's security.
Seth Tupper, thank you so much for that. Obviously, we have many more headlines and topics we could address, but we're going to leave it there for today. Seth Tupper is a Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter. Seth, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And John Hunter, publisher of Madison Daily Leader. John, thank you as well.
Thanks, Lori, and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Jonathan Ellis, right there in Sioux Falls with the Argus Leader. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Lori.
Those were a few of our Dakota Political Junkies. You can listen to in-depth conversations about South Dakota politics every Wednesday on Dakota Midday.